Sweeten your business purchases with American Express Blue Business Cash, the card that makes everyday expenses extra rewarding. You'll earn 2% cash back on your first $50,000 in purchases per year, and then 1% after that, so you can treat your bottom line and give your business a helpful boost. Swipe after swipe. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/bluebusinesscash. Amex Blue Business Cash. Built for business by American Express.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to It Never Rains on this podcast. I'm Hithloday. I'm the managing editor for Addicted to Quack. It's a website. Joining me this week, as last week, as one of our great writers on ATQ, Badwater. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Much better than last week and the weekend before.
So you snatched life from the jaws of death?
I did. Once again, I emerged victorious.
Not today. So the baseball team is in action actually tonight as we record on Tuesday night. They're going up against Gonzaga again, this time in Eugene. They wrapped up over the weekend a series at Arizona State and, in fact, won for the first time ever in Tempe a series. The bats really came alive on the Friday and Sunday games. They dropped the Saturday game, which was a little weird. You know, cold bats. Well, not that cold a bat. You know, they wound up scoring 4 runs. They just gave up 6. But you know, we were talking about last week, Badwater was just like, half of this podcast was really freaking out about where Oregon's bats went. And the other half of this podcast was like, no, it's fine. What do you want to say to that turn of events?
Well, the Ducks are in a critical stretch in baseball, and it's because of who they're facing in Pac-12 opponents, and let's not forget Gonzaga, because Gonzaga is a nationally ranked team, and tonight's game is hugely important. But there's going to be, a couple of keys in tonight's game and the coming weekend series against Arizona. One is that you're clustering a bunch of games together. You know, we come off a weekend series into a Tuesday game and then into a weekend series that starts on Thursday instead of Friday.
Right. They're essentially playing 7 games in 9 days.
Yeah. Which is that's a tough stretch, especially on your pitchers. So it'll be very interesting to see how the Ducks cope with that. I thought their Friday game was very interesting. Pitching management, because they've seen this coming for quite a while, and it was knows what to do. So it'll be interesting to see how the mid game against Gonzaga, the midweek game, is managed pitching wise. I'm very interested in seeing who they bring out for their starter and how they relieve the starter, much like last Friday.
You know, it's interesting. A couple other interesting notes to me, like in particular, that Sunday game against Arizona, you know, it just struck me that Arizona was making a lot of like slot, like Oregon was hitting well, you know, don't get me wrong. They were, you know, swinging early and connecting and putting the ball into play. And, you know, none of that's real easy. And they were effectively doing it, but they were getting extra bases off of Arizona State, just playing real sloppy. You know, there was the Little League home run, you know, where basically a double turned into a home run on two fielding errors. And that's just the most egregious example. You know, I've seen extra bases all the time on just, you know, poor throws, you know, out of Arizona State. I don't think you can expect that out of Gonzaga. I don't think you can expect that out of a lot of teams at the, you know, that's coming up in the inaugural Pac-12 baseball tournament. You know, I do think that Oregon has an athletic advantage against a lot of the teams that they play in baseball, as they do in softball, as they do in most sports. But, you know, it's sort of being clear to me, I know that you want to talk about the pitching. I want to talk about the offense. Like the thing that's remarkable to me is that, you know, they put up big scores because this is a really effective base running team and they know how to take advantage of mistakes. And I, you know, what's your take on that? You agree? You think I'm off base? What do you think?
No. And, I'll talk about a kind of a microcosm of, what you're talking about. You know, I was picking on Jacob Walsh last podcast for his batting discipline. He did not bat, in the second UC San Diego game. Mm-hmm. And he didn't bat in the first ASU game, even though, you know, he was on first base in the bottom of the ninth inning. Then comes Saturday, out of the 8 or 10 runners that were left on base, on that Saturday loss, Jacob Walsh accounted for 4 of those. Then on Sunday, he walks twice and then knocks off that home run. So, the batting coaching has obviously worked with him, you know, and tweaked whatever, you know, freshman mistakes he's making at the plate. Yeah, you know, because he needs to be patient and not swing at dirt, and it really showed up this last weekend. You know, he had a fantastic outing in that respect on Saturday and Sunday, and they need him this weekend and weekend on offense.
Well, the other thing I'll tell you about watching Arizona State was that it was very clear that they were uncomfortable with their bullpen. And, you know, I got to say, watching Oregon, it's, you know, I can't say that I'm in love with any one of Oregon's pitchers. You know, there are some who've had some nice seasons. But I'm not seeing, like, when I watch softball and I watch an ace pitcher who just shuts down the opponent and they go scoreless, like, you know, I don't think Oregon's baseball has an ace pitcher in that sense. But what they do have is a lot of relief. They have a lot of guys that they're comfortable with. I sometimes wish Waz would move a little faster in pulling him. In fact, I think we saw that in the Sunday game against Arizona State, where, you know, the starting pitcher was having a pretty good game, but they left him for maybe like half an inning too long. I really wish Waz were a little quicker on the trigger on that one. But anyway, Arizona State definitely needed to pull their starter, and like, they didn't have anybody to replace him with. You know, the next guy like immediately gives up, I think, 2 hits. You know, Oregon collected multiple walks against Arizona State on Sunday, including 2 where they were hit by pitches, which, like, you know, I don't think that was chin music. You know, I think he just lost control of his pitch. And like, I think the Arizona State coach, you know, like, cut to shots of the guy just staring there looking shell shocked. Like, how is my pitching this bad? Like, how do I not have better options than this? And, you know, Oregon is not in that situation. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's not necessarily in defense of the ASU situation, because Oregon has to deal with the same thing, but there were some brutal temperatures there.
Oh yeah, it was hot
Saturday and Sunday. I mean, I would
But I mean,
I would melt.
I mean, no one has ever in the history of the universe been forced to go to Arizona State University. Although there was a funny line in the Aunt Becky scandal transcript about that. Like, if you choose to play in Tempe, you ought to be used to the heat, buddy. Like, I don't got no sympathy for that one.
Yeah, you got to know what's coming. And like I say, it affects those of us ducks that are okay with our soggy weather just the same. So, the Ducks had a really great offensive weekend, and they almost cleared the hurdle on Saturday. Just not quite.
Honestly, I've said this a few times on this podcast, like, most of my life watching baseball, four runs is enough runs to win a baseball game. That was really just like, you know, they broke down in a couple innings, you know, on the defensive side and let a few more runs go than they should have. And even in that Sunday game where they were throttling them, they let Arizona State sort of like sneak in a little bit, you know. In fact, I think I was making fun of you in the game thread for inviting that. That's what I'm looking forward to. Now, you know, as to tonight's game, you know, against Gonzaga, this podcast will go up after the game concludes, so we're going to sound like idiots if we talk about it too much. It's just inevitable. That's what I recall about, you know, the game that they played in Spokane as a midweek or earlier in the season was that, you know, you wrote a preview article and were slurms. I can't remember who did it. It was you, definitely. Like, and you were talking about, like, you know, this team's got a really great pitching staff. And then they wound up not showing it because, you know, as the announcer said repeatedly, like, they don't really care about this game. They only care about conference play right now. And so they had like their third baseman, you know, pitching, you know, and Oregon beat them, I think 9-5 or something like that. I wonder what's going to happen in this game in terms of like Gonzaga's pitching. Well, you know, they're up to number 10 now. They are, you know, probably jockeying for position. You know, they will probably get a regional, but it's not certain yet. I think they would love to bag the Ducks to guarantee themselves, you know, hosting a regional. I think they might bring out the firepower tonight. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's a different point in the season, and the Bulldogs do not want to let this one get away from them.
Because this is all to say, you know, if Oregon loses, it was, you know, they just had the target on their back, man. You should forgive them. But if they win, whoo boy, you know, Duck Natty, here we come. We're covered either way. I'll edit the podcast tonight after we record and the game is over so that, you know, whatever we say sounds smarter.
We're going to see some more ferocious pitching from Gonzaga, and the Ducks need to respond. You know, their bats need to connect because they still have the relief staff to back up the offense.
Well, they finish their regular season before the Pac-12 tournament. It's entirely at home, right? They get, you know, beating Arizona State on the road was great. What was even nicer is that they get four games at home, you know, against Gonzaga and Arizona, which is also ranked. And then they got to go back to, you know, Arizona for the Pac-12 baseball tournament. You know, they've shown they can win in Arizona. They've shown they can win in Eugene. And those are, you know, pretty different climates. So, you know, I like the Ducks going into this. You know, they dropped out of the rankings after their, you know, horrible series against, you know, Oregon State, which I have a hard time blaming them for. But like, you know, I like this homestand to finish it out. You know, I think if they, you know, I think if they beat Gonzaga like they did earlier in the year and they win the series against Arizona, you know, another ranked team, that should put them, you know, in a pretty good, you know, mental place going into the Pac-12 tournament. That's what I'm looking to see.
Yeah, tonight's going to be a really good game against two pretty evenly matched teams. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about some softball.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. After a week off, the Oregon Ducks softball team got their regional notification. They will be heading to Fayetteville, Arkansas, to play in the Arkansas Regional. The first team up is Wichita State, which ain't a half bad team. I think they're like 36 nationally in RPI. Oregon is 17. It's a double elimination tournament. And the other two teams, of course, are Arkansas, which is the number four seed and number four in RPI. That's going to be a real tough team to get past. And then the last team in the regional is Princeton. Princeton's like 122. I have a hard time seeing Princeton winning a game in this tournament, or in this regional. I expect that Arkansas will take care of business against Princeton in their first game. Oregon will probably have something of a fight against Wichita State in their game. But then they basically, you know, assuming that they beat the Shockers, they got to beat, you know, Arkansas twice. And I got to say, Arkansas is 44-9. You know, the Ducks beating them twice would constitute like a substantial percentage of all of their losses that they have suffered in the year 2022. I don't know. I feel like this is a pretty tough matchup for the Ducks. How are you feeling about it?
Well, on paper, the Shockers and the Ducks are pretty evenly matched. Wichita State can bring on the bats. They've scored significant runs. Certainly not necessarily against the same kind of competition as the Ducks face in the Pac-12. But they can bring the bats to the table. The pitching's fairly evenly matched. Both teams struggle to win games against top 25 teams. So they're pretty much even in that respect. And I think that when you dig a little bit, the Ducks probably have a slight advantage given the nature of the Pac-12 competition that they've had to face. But these are two really evenly matched teams, and I'm looking forward to a really good game that, you know, the Ducks are riding some momentum. Wichita State's beatable.
Oh, I definitely think that Wichita State's a beatable team. You know, they did not challenge themselves that much, and multiple of their most challenging opponents, you know, the games were canceled or postponed, like Arkansas, for example. They had a Minnesota game that was canceled. And then, you know, it's sort of like, you know, a lot of their conference opponents or the conference that they wind up drawing a bunch of American Athletic Conference teams because they're in a weird situation. But like, boy, the AAC looks bad at baseball, or softball, excuse me. Like, they are annihilating, you know, certain teams. Then I look up their, you know, record and their RPI standings, and it's like, oh, well, that's why. I think, you know, Wichita State looks like a paper tiger to me. I'm not really worried about Oregon getting past them. On the other hand, it means that they're probably, you know, if Oregon wins a game against Arkansas, you know, I really have a hard time seeing Arkansas getting, like, you know, eliminated by Wichita State. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably, you know, Wichita State's it's not a great draw for Oregon because it's a tough enough team to play, you know, so they can't just cruise in their first game, but it's not tough enough to, like, you know, take out the top seed in the regional bracket. You know, that's the, you know,
Arkansas at home is just a really tough regional draw. That's just all there is to it. And it's going to be tough for anybody that faces them.
I have a I have a hard time seeing the Ducks make it past the regional in this time around. If they do, however, the super regional will be real fun because the other teams, you know, the team opposite or the bracket opposite them for the super regional contains both Washington and Texas. So that'd be real fun to see who comes out of
that. That's going to be a battle.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We get back. We'll talk about track and field, talk about golf, we'll talk about a little football and some more.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, which amazing championship team do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's talk about Tracktown. Because the Ducks picked up titles in the men and women's, you know, track and field events, which seems appropriate, being that it's in Eugene, and you know, if Eugene's going to call itself Tracktown, then we should be doing that kind of thing. But it also sets up the city of Eugene nicely for the Worlds that are coming in July, and I really think that there isn't any town, any city in the United States that really brings that track and field fervor like you'll find at Hayward Field. I just don't.
I can't think of any town that celebrates track and field the way that, you know, Eugene does. You know, I think there's a reason why Worlds and Olympic qualifiers and Pac-12 championship and, you know, so forth, you know, happen in Eugene, because like they're going to fill it up. You know, like this town takes, you know, takes it pretty seriously. The Pac-12 championship was, it was the first time since 2017 that both the men and the women, have won the Pac-12 title. Although, you know, the men have definitely held up their end of the bargain. I think this is their 17th straight, Pac-12 championship. The women had given it up to USC the last couple of years, but they finally wrestled it back. It was, you know, overall, obviously, you know, an excellent performance. Kevin Nelson had a great meet. Mike Williams, Nelson took three individual titles. The Oregon won in the relay. They won the 100 and 200 meters. They swept the triple jump events. You know, it was great. It was, you know, just a fantastic performance. You know. I'm definitely looking forward to Worlds in July. And you know, the other thing that was phenomenal about reading, you know, seeing the media coverage of all this is that, you know, competing against, you know, teams like Texas A&M and Florida, and, you know, and so forth, you know, is wonderful. But like, I love watching races against Pac-12 opponents where it's all these Pac-12 colors who are just like suffering in their losses to Oregon. Like, there's something especially enjoyable about that. You know what I mean?
Especially the Southern California schools.
Yes, most certainly. And then the golf teams, both the men and women, again, are doing very well. The women went down to I believe, Albuquerque, right?
Yes.
And they finished up first in the NCAA tournament. They're off to the next round, although they get a little bit of a break. You know, I think they start on the 20th for the next round. The men played today. How'd they do?
Well, after coming in at 7th, I believe, yesterday, today they shot their second lowest round to par in program history, and now they're top of the leaderboard. So the Duck men are saying, the men's team is on par with the pun intended, with the women's team, and Oregon's a golf school.
Yeah, definitely. Like, definitely a golf school, not, you know, track and field. That's kind of old hat, right? Everybody knows Hayward Field, but like Oregon's a golf school now, right? You know, look out, everybody.
Yeah, it takes a lot for me to follow golf, but I am.
Yeah. Speaking of a sport that requires a lot of concentration, the women's soccer team is wrapping up their friendlies in spring season. They're going up to Corvallis, in which, you know, I think friendly will just be metaphorical. We are sending an intrepid live reporter to that game. What are you looking forward to in Corvallis?
Well, what I'm looking forward to is getting ahead of kind of having a sense of the team and team play ahead of fall. You know, springtime in soccer are games that don't count. They're kind of exhibition. They're the same thing as scrimmages in football spring camp. So you look for kind of the same things there. You know, who are the new players that are looking good? How are your established veterans doing? And, you know, this weekend it'll be a good game to be able to do some kind of evaluation with that, because it's against a Pac-12 foe, in a rivalry game, even though it's exhibition, that we'll be seeing in the fall. So because soccer is sparsely covered, it's going to give me an opportunity to, you know, potentially get a feel for how the team is looking and who to be looking for when we get into the fall season.
Well, I hope you drive safe and that there's no livestock wandering around the roads. Be sure to bring your camera, since it will be the only coverage that we, like, I went through our entire photo database looking for soccer, photos and the stuff.
We got nothing.
Yeah. So you are going to constitute the database, for our soccer, coverage going forward.
I'll be ready for that.
Oh, very good.
And come fall, I'll probably have to, attend some soccer games. You know, if we're going to get additional coverage and pictures. So, you know, for all you both or one soccer fans out there, I got you covered.
Well, this is coming dangerously close to real journalism. I don't know how I feel about that. As for me, I have also been doing previewing of fall sports. I have been continuing my series, previewing Oregon football opponents. This week I did the California Golden Bears, which I got to be honest, like I kind of got a soft spot for the Bears. You know, they're probably my, like, my second team in the Pac-12. I just sort of, you know, I like the university. You know, there was a stretch there. It's now getting to be, you know, I'm getting to starting to date myself here, in which, like, Cal just totally owned Oregon in Strawberry Canyon. Those days appear to be over. You know, the Ducks have pretty much owned that series, with the exception of the weird, fluky 2020 COVID year. And even then, frankly, the Ducks were out playing and they just couldn't stop turning the ball over or committing penalties. But I digress. You know, I've been writing previews of Cal since they're a divisional opponent. Oregon has to play him every year. You know, I write two articles about them every year. And I'm like, I like the concept of the Bears a lot more than I like the execution, you know, under Coach Wilcox. Like, you know, that guy's a former Oregon player. His offensive and defensive coordinators are both former Oregon players, you know, and so it brings me no pleasure to, like, make fun of that coaching staff. I don't like that coaching staff, I don't like the way that they make strategic decisions. Like, if I can get a little technical here, like, there's a difference between strategy and tactics. Like, on the tactical level, like, it's actually a pretty good coaching staff at, like, squeezing the most out of their talent. You know, it's like, it's a disciplined team. They don't commit a lot of stupid penalties. Like they don't commit assignment errors, you know, like you don't catch guy. Occasionally you do, but then like coach, you know, makes a change, right? Like, they were having that problem at cornerback, you know, throughout the season where the dude was just not, you know, playing assignment football, and he, you know, and Coach Wilcox swapped him out with a freshman, you know, because of it. You just sort of tells like, I will not tolerate, you not playing, you know, proper assignment football. But like when it comes to making strategic decisions about like which, you know, which coordinators to hire, which quarterback to put in, you know, what kind of, you know, offensive structure to run, you know, how to manage the clock, you know, and just sort of the general failure to see that like what's really holding his team back, like what's really holding his team back is that it's like the 10th most talented team in the Pac-12, and the failure to see that like he really needs to go out and get more talent, and then when he gets that talent, he needs to put his senior walk-ons on the bench and play those guys. Like all of these I think constitute strategic errors, even while I think he's a good tactician. And like, you know, and writing this article just taught me, you know, all of those lessons over again. I didn't see one single piece of evidence that guy, you know, has grown up strategically in 6 years of coaching this Cal team. And you know, it was frankly kind of like, you know, like I said, didn't bring me any pleasure to write it, but boy, I really think Oregon dodged a bullet by not hiring that guy.
Oh yeah. I totally agree with you there. In fact, I was nervous when Cristobal left about the talk of wanting to hire Wilcox or Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
And Chip Kelly's beloved by Duck fans, and rightfully so, but he inherited an established veteran coaching staff and, you know, worked off of that. When he's had to establish a new coaching staff, he hasn't been as successful, and that's what we would have been looking at if Chip Kelly was rehired as head coach. And, you know, I of course see the same things that your more informed opinion does at Cal. There's just no way I wanted to see either of those two get hired.
I certainly agree with you about, you know, I didn't want Chip Kelly either. It's going to be a while before I publish my UCLA article because, as I was complaining about last week, those guys take forever to publish their roster. And so they just, I mean, I'm not kidding. They've waited till like June or July in the past to publish their roster. And I mean, I can't do what I do until I have an official roster to work with.
Sure.
To sort of calculate like why, you know, why is this guy not on the team anymore? You know, that sort of question. I mean, that's my bread and butter in these articles. And so UCLA is inevitably towards the end. I agree with you with that telling of Chip Kelly that, like, you know, the way that I phrased it is that, you know, when he got to Oregon, it was like the plane was already gassed up. It was well maintained. He had a clear runway. You know, all the snacks were loaded, and he, you know, hopped in the cockpit, you know, hit the gas and flew that plane real well. And when he got to UCLA, you know, the plane was on fire, you know, and, you know, and all the snacks were poisoned. And he just has done a terrible job in Los Angeles. And I don't know, I didn't really pay attention to his NFL career, but I'm not really sure how in charge of things he was or how well it went when he got some power. But definitely I've been watching UCLA for the, you know, 5 years that he's been there. Like I said, I haven't gotten to this year yet. It may finally be that he's got the team, you know, that he wants, and that the fires are put out. So we'll have to see how he does this year. Although it's still like disturbing that it took this long for him to fire obviously incompetent defensive staff.
I think he's been partially helped by the ineptitude of USC. And
well, I mean, who hasn't? Like,
yeah, exactly. But presumably, that'll be kind of put to rest with Lincoln Riley being the coach at USC.
We'll see. I mean, obviously, Lincoln Riley is a better coach than Clay Helton. I mean, how could he not be? But that's another team where I'm going to wait. You know, it's going to be late in this series before I preview them. I don't know. Like, you know, I had questions about Lincoln Riley when I was doing my Alamo Bowl preview of Oklahoma. There were a lot of ways about that, the way that team was structured, that I sort of had gripes with. I think that USC fans might have a sort of a bumpy road in the first year, because he too, let's recall, did the Chip Kelly thing and inherited a stacked team from Bob Stoops. And I mean, what Oklahoma fans have been complaining about, you know, not that anything would stop them from complaining, but what they've been complaining about is like, hey, look at all the performance indices of Oklahoma. Like, each year of Lincoln Riley, the team gets worse. You know, that might be another Chip Kelly too. And on the other hand, like, Oregon's got a pretty stacked roster. Like, maybe if Chip Kelly came in with this roster instead of the UCLA one that he inherited back in 2018, maybe he'd hop in the cockpit and fly it real well. Like, I don't know about that. What I definitely can say for certain at this point is that Oregon dodged a bullet, you know, by not hiring Justin Wilcox. I don't even know how serious that offer was. It does not strike me in line with what I know about Rob Mullins to give in to, like, sentimentality. Like, I understand there's some folks in the fan base and maybe some former players who want to, you know, run back to their exes. You know, I feel like that's sentimental and weak, you know, and Rob Mullins, you know, whatever you want to say about the guy, that dude is not sentimental. That dude is not weak of spirit. That dude was in charge of the college football playoff committee for a couple of years. Like, that, you know, that dude's that dude told Mike White to take a hike, cause he knew what his value was, and that was not it.
Some of the talk may have been just to pacify that noisy fan base that, you know, looks with rose tinted glasses on, you know, former players and former coaches.
Yeah, I honestly think, you know, I can't prove this, obviously. This is just speculation, but based on what I know of Rob Mullins and based on what I know about Justin Wilcox, and both of those things are a lot, you know, I've been studying both Cal and Oregon's administrative structure. I mean, be the only person in the universe who says that with a smile on their face. Like, I really dig organizational dynamics. And I really think, you know, one of the great untold stories, maybe I'll write a book about this someday, one of the great untold stories in American athletic history is, you know, the rise of the Oregon athletic department over the last, you know, 30 years. And it comes from organizational competence. And Rob Mullins is, you know, it's not like he was there for the entire time, but he is one of the, you know, great athletic directors at Oregon. And they get there by being, you know, competent and non-sentimental. And what I know about Mullins and what I know about Wilcox, I have a very hard time believing that that was a serious offer. I think he called him in, gave him a cup of coffee and said, I will give you $100 to coach this football team. $100 million? No, Justin, $100.
Yeah.
And Justin Wilcox, you know, rightfully would be, you know, told him to F off and walked out the door, because that was the result that Rob Mullins wanted. He wanted to be able to say to everybody, I offered him the job, guys. And he wanted Justin Wilcox to say no. Again, this is 100% speculation on my part, but it's the best fit for the data. Sure. Because, like I said, you know, the point of me talking about this is to plug my article. Read my Cal preview, damn it. That's the other thing that I have to say that I, you know, I have a little bit of complaint about. Like, I got a ton of clicks on Arizona State. Why? Because Oregon doesn't play them. They're not scheduled to play them. That team definitely ain't making the Pac-12 title game. But people want to see train wreck, right? And people are going to click on my Washington article and my USC article and Utah article because they want to, you know, read up on the scary opponents or the rivalry opponents or whatever. Everybody is sort of like, everybody sleeps on Cal. Every time, every single time I publish an article about Cal, everybody sleeps on him. Even the year where they beat the Ducks, they sleep on him. As well they might, it's not a scary team.
Well, still, yeah, I really dug the Cal article. And they might not be a scary team, but they've had the potential in the past to be like Stanford, which Stanford is kind of prevailed in the past 8 or 10 years of, you know, being the party buster for the Oregon Ducks. Oh, you know, man, some my
favorite. They just got lucky last year. Give me a break. I mean, you watched that game. I mean, I did.
Look,
luck is a four-letter word in the analyst's business. Like, we do not like go into that one because it's way too easy to go to. But like, give me a break, dude. Like, the offensive coordinator is in the hospital. The quarterback has the refs went, like, you could see David Shaw paying them. Like, I mean, come on. Like,
yeah, you know. And once again, I was telling myself, watch Stanford do this again. You know, I was in the press box for the Stanford game. Where
the 2018 one?
Yeah, for where?
No, no. The 2012 one. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, for the game where DeAnthony Thomas misses the tackle, and you just watch that kind of game go to hell, and it's never left me.
I mean, look, the 2009 game where Stanford just lights Oregon up. That aside, the 2016-2017 when Oregon wasn't very good, David Shaw, you know, or Jim Harbaugh has been the coach, you know, every single time. The wins that Stanford has with, you know, I noted the exceptions, the wins that Stanford have are fluky and weird, right? That 2012 game was fluky and weird, right? You know, every Oregon fan can tell you about, like, you know, that tight end didn't catch that ball, you know, that was not a real penalty. The 2018 game, you know, where Jalen Redd hits the pylon and the game-winning touchdown goes off the board. The 2021 game where what the hell was that? You know, like, every time Stanford wins a game against Oregon, with a couple exceptions where they deserve to win the game, you know, they don't deserve to win the game. I know that sounds like a tautology, I mean, give me a break, dude. Meanwhile, Oregon 2015, you know, destroys them. Oregon in 2019 destroys them. Oregon in 2020 destroys them. Like, you know, you can't find, you know, close, you know, Oregon in 2010 destroy. You can't find, like, close wins by Oregon. When Oregon plays Stanford and they win, they destroy them. When Stanford plays Oregon and they win, it's weird stuff happen. Like, Stanford is not the team that worries me. You know, unless they have that magic rabbit foot in their back pocket. You know, and for the same reason, Cal is not a team that ever really worries me. Like, Cal is trying to be, you know, Stanford on offense without the offensive line or the tight end or Andrew Luck. Like, it is, I mean, it's remarkable to me how anemic that offense is. And they're losing their quarterback, and, you know, they haven't fixed their offensive line problem. And they're probably going to go with a transfer quarterback from Purdue, who lost his job repeatedly because he was not aggressive enough. Which, like, oh yeah, you can tell Cal coaches, you know, the arch conservative, you know, Cal coaches are like, a super conservative quarterback who takes care of the ball and doesn't push it down the field. Woo! They're, you know, they're delighted at that prospect, but he's not going to have Chase Garber's legs. That was the thing, is Chase Garber's, you know, I wasn't real wild about him as a quarterback, but he was a scrambler. He was an excellent, you know, scrambler. That dude bailed Cal out so much. And Plummer's not going to be able to do that. He didn't have the wheels for that. You know,
yeah, I'm still kind of haunted by Cal games of 15 or 20 years ago where, well, yeah, it was the exact same thing. It's like, what the actual heck? Really? Really? This happens, I mean, and the Ducks lose? But the Cal games, really?
Like 15, 20 years ago under Tedford, like, they had, first of all, they had some real talent. Like, remember, like, Cal, like, to this day, Cal, you know, still has, I think, the most Super Bowl rings of any team in the Pac-12 North. Like, is it responsible for, you know, more Super Bowl rings than anybody else in the Pac-12 North because of, you know, some of the incredible players they put out? And I think that Jeff Tedford's a hell of an offensive coach. Like, that's, we are not talking about a lot of talent in Berkeley right now, and we are not talking about, you know, real aggressive offensive genius of a coach. Like, that team's kind of, I mean, it's just kind of sad to write about, you know, frankly, because I like them, and I wish they'd make better decisions. On the other hand, I do think there's a potential for their defense to be better. You know, they had an excellent defense in 2018. And then just a lot of stuff happened to them. read my article for a recounting of all of them. You know, but basically they had like five big problems, and they fixed like three, maybe three and a half of them. And in that sense, I think their defense will be, and then on top of that, like I said, I do think that they get the most out of their players.
Well, I enjoyed your review of Cal quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to that bearing out, because that will do my heart good.
Well, I think any team that plays them, it's going to be a low scoring game, because I think their defense will be better. I don't think it'll be the greatest defense in the world. I think it's going to be the second coming of the 2018 defense, but I do think that it's going to be better. Like if you've set your expectation for Cal's defense based on the last 3 years, in which, you know, they had some significant problems, I'm here to tell you, you need to reset your expectation, because they fixed a lot of those problems. And the other thing about their offense is it's a relatively efficient offense, and Musgrave really wants it to be, you know, the super methodical offense. The problem is it's so unexplosive that, they wind up having these long, like 15 play drives that take 8 minutes off the clock and then score no points, because they don't even get into field goal range with them. Like that's how like anemic it is. But anyway, you know, the point is that I expect their defense to be better, and I expect their offense to hold the ball. And therefore, you know, I think Cal's going to be in a lot of games where, oh, you know what, if I'm giving out gambling advice, nobody should gamble. It is immoral and stupid. If hypothetically I were talking to a gambler who were looking for a sure thing in the Pac-12, take the under in Cal games. Cal will control the ball, not score, and will stop you from scoring. Like they're going to be in a lot of games where, like, set the over under at 30, give me the under. It, you know, it's going to be like 17 to 10. The opponent's going to win 17 to 10, but they're, you know, it's they're not going over 30.
Yeah, read the article, Duck fans. It's great stuff. All of Hithliday's stuff is great stuff. So,
all right. That sounds like the perfect note to end on. It's time to go watch baseball. They're just finished warming up, and that'll do it for us this week. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you on the flip side.